paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
All right. It's time to podcast once again. How you doing, Reggie? Feeling good? Feeling funky? Feeling good. All right. That's when the music takes me. That's where the music takes me. That's where the music is. I got the music in me. Feeling funky. Feeling good. That's Kiki D Band. I got the music in me. Anyway, how are you? You don't have no idea what I'm talking about, so it doesn't matter, Reg. Okay, here we go. Are you ready? I'll give you the three S's. Star, smile, strong. And I'll say, put it in the book, episode 512. And I'll say 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, it's always important to listen to the podcast, but I think it's just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you enjoy what you've been hearing, whether you've been listening to us for 5 minutes or 5 years or 10 minutes or 10 years almost, then go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, go to the prompt for this podcast, and lo and behold, you will find podcast after podcast of previous podcasts. How about all that alliteration there? A lot of P words in there. And I didn't pop any of them, by the way. P, that means pop. Need to do that little spit thing with the P. Didn't do that, though, on that. That's why I'm a professional. But anyway, you can go to the WGNRadio.com and find all the podcasts that you want. Going back several years, maybe not 10 years, not since we started. We're coming up on our 10th anniversary, though, in May, late May. We'll have done this for 10 years. And how many episodes? Well, according to my calculations, this is episode number 512. So I'm sure you're aware over the last couple of weeks that we've had a something of a viral, I don't want to call it a sensation. I think we've had a viral event. It's gotten some attention. It's gotten some traction if you go on social media. I wouldn't say it's become a phenomenon like we've seen some other viral things, you know, whatever you want to call them, viral posts, become these global phenomena, sensations. I wouldn't call this a sensation, but I think it's worth discussing because it really does put a mirror up to a lot of different things. You can look at this, and it's gotten a lot of people talking and a lot of people wondering. And as I said, whether it's worthy or not, it's got the attention of a lot of people, which doesn't seem to be hard to do these days. And at the same time, it seems to be very hard to do. I don't know if there is any kind of blueprint or recipe for something that's going to go viral or something that doesn't. I think that's what makes it. Though that, I think going viral is something like winning the lottery. The person that posts something may be calculated and may be doing it to go viral. In fact, I think that's the goal of everybody under the age of 25 is to do something online viral and then become a viral star and then become an influencer and get paid to just be yourself and to get dressed and to eat something and to talk about yourself and talk about what you do. And that seems to be a profession now. That's an occupation. It's very risky. I don't know how stable it is. It doesn't have a long-term kind of stability, but that doesn't matter. We are in today's culture, we are in the look at me, attention. Look at me, I'm special, look at me, look at me. And it's been that way. I've been talking about this for several years. If you didn't believe me a while ago, I think it's impossible not to now. And whether it's good or bad, it's here. It's here to stay. The genie's out of the bottle. Narcissism is the way to go today. And so that's it doesn't really do anything to buck the system anymore. You don't have to partake in the system. You don't have to like it, but you can't deny it's there, and it ain't going away, because narcissism is inbred in us, and social media gave it validity. For decades, for centuries, we had tried to push down this part of our personalities as a species. But in the last 15 to 20 years, the combination of the iPhone and social media unleashed it, made it acceptable, and now makes it both acceptable, popular, and profitable. And when those three things get together, there's no stopping anything. So it's here to stay. But what I wanted to talk about was this latest viral event that has gotten a lot of attention. And of course, it wasn't meant. Well, this is the question. Was it meant to, or was it not meant to? At the very least, what it did do is grab attention, which was the ultimate goal of this. And then, of course, in our society here, there are very few original ideas. Everybody basically finds, when somebody finds an original idea that someone else did, what people usually do is just copy it. I think we're in a narcissistic Xerox culture right now. We just copy it. We take someone else's idea and say, well, that was a good idea. I didn't think of it, but today it doesn't matter. I'll do it anyway, and maybe I'll get some credit for it. There's very little, attribution anymore to anything. Everybody takes everything. People take pictures from your websites or from your Facebook pages, and they put them someplace. I mean, there's no attribution. There's no more rules. It's a very loose, loosey-goosey society. Boy, Jim, you sound down on the culture. Yeah, I really am, to be honest with you. I think a lot of the fun of things, a lot of the specialness of things is gone, because it's just one big blob now. We're just bombarded by things. But every so often, something catches people's eye. Most of the time, these viral videos are either really silly, they're slapstick, there's some pain involved, there's some accident involved, there's something silly. They're basically, I guess, meant to be a distraction from the everyday craziness. Hey, if that's what you need, that's what you need. But this one was actually done for a real purpose. And my question is, did it achieve what it was supposed to do? Was its seemingly original message or purpose that was presented, was it the real purpose? Or was there a ulterior motive? This is something for you conspiracy theorists out there too. So I'm not going to get into promoting anybody or anything. I'll just say that I'm sure you've heard that a CEO of a very successful and popular fast food company several weeks ago went and did what should have been seemingly a very harmless little post. I don't know if it was on TikTok or X, not sure, or Instagram, wherever it was, but it was seemingly just a very harmless promotional video to be posted to promote a new burger for this major global fast food chain. Okay? And now, of course, that's becoming more and more prevalent in this social media age. There was a time when you didn't know who the head of any companies were at all. You really didn't know. They were behind the ivory towers. They hired spokespeople. They hired you know, celebrities to be the face of them, of their companies, you know, on commercials and in ads. And as I said, spokespeople, but you really didn't know who ran some of the biggest companies in the world. But obviously, as time went on, I mean, everybody knows who Henry Ford is. But my point is, for a good period of time, there were a lot of faceless industrialists. You may have heard their names because they were prominent in their businesses, but you didn't really know who they were. You didn't know what they were. Interestingly enough, I would say it was around, I mean, there's always been a few that have popped up here and there, but obviously one of the most, the first ones to really make a splash was Colonel Sanders with Kentucky Fried Chicken. Supposedly it was the Colonel's own secret recipe, which according to legend is still hidden away somewhere in a vault and blah, blah, blah. Although, of course, online, I'm sure you know that there's really very few secret recipes anymore, and you can always find people that have the recipe for, you know, the secret sauce, you know, or the breading of something or whatever. You know, make your own. I mean, there's only so many spices in the world, right? I mean, the key is the amount of spices. But if somebody really wants to, you know, set out to break a code of a recipe like that, if you have the time to do it, you can do it. And it's been done, apparently. But my point is, you know, Colonel Sanders was one of the first ones who put himself out there as a company spokesman. And of course, the Colonel's, you know, image is still a part of the advertising. For a while it wasn't, but then it came back, and then they've done some kooky commercials. If you remember a few years ago, they had several different high-profile actors and actresses portray the Colonel. He passed away many years ago, but he used to do his own commercials. But at the same side, as I said before, like something like McDonald's, they used Ronald McDonald. You heard of Ray Kroc, and you know, he became a high profile guy just because of the way the company grew, and then he bought baseball teams and became kind of a newsmaker. But he really wasn't out in the public all that much. Ronald McDonald was the face of McDonald's. You didn't know who ran Burger King. You knew the king, you know. You know, in the fast food world, it was interesting because another owner that really helped elevate their brand was Dave Thomas, who started Wendy's. And after it went national in the late 70s and early 80s, he, like the Colonel, became a spokesperson and the face of Wendy's. Even though they had their little Wendy, you know, logo there with the little Pippi Longstocking kind of girl, Dave Thomas was out there doing the commercials, kind of trying to have this personal connection. And then, of course, when the tech boom exploded, then that's really when the CEOs or the founders became their own celebrity, in addition to running the company. I mean, Steve Jobs is certainly with Apple going back into the 80s was like that. But certainly when the tech boom started in the mid to late 90s, that's when all of a sudden everything sort of changed with the internet, but also just because of the internet, you know, it put a spotlight, this new technology revolution. And ever since the mid 90s now, we know who the heads of companies are, certainly because of tech companies like, you know, Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates. And people like that have come to prominence, and they have promoted themselves as much as their companies. And you could even make an argument that probably one of the biggest self-promoters or CEOs of a company that became celebrities unto themselves, which also helped their brand, you have to say that it was Donald Trump. In the 80s, you know, he became, I mean, let's face it, at the end of the day, Donald Trump, all Donald Trump was a real estate developer. I mean, certainly a successful one to some extent. There's been a lot of questions about his wealth and questions about, you know, bankruptcies and things like that. But my point is, how many real estate developers do you know have a international name recognition or face recognition? Not many. It, you know, their buildings are exciting. What they build is exciting. But the developers themselves, you don't know the major developers by face or name. I mean, Donald Trump did an amazing thing in the 80s. He really put himself out into the world. And in a great extent, the media, especially the New York media, kind of created him. And they both served each other. And then, of course, Trump put his name on everything. And in the high-flying 80s, in the days of Dallas and Dynasty, when riches and excesses and lifestyles of the rich and famous were all being touted and all being glorified, well, Donald Trump fit right into that. He was the real personification of the fictional things that people were watching. He took you into his penthouses and showed you all the lavish gold, and here's my my wife Ivana, and we're going to parties and da da da. They were kind of like you know, Blake Carrington from Dynasty and his several wives, personified at that time. And so obviously, you know, at the end of the day, while he became a personality, he also was the head of a multi-million or some say billion-dollar company, and his name was on all these buildings, Trump Tower. There's one here in Chicago. So clearly, like him or not, hate him or not, you can't deny that he became associated as a celebrity CEO, just like the other people that I was talking about, whether it's Jeff Bezos or and now today Elon Musk and so many other people like that. And so now it is commonplace for the, at times, invisible CEOs to take a prominent public view, especially with social media. You know, within these companies, the social media directors, and that's a job now, are pushing to say to their CEOs, you know, we want to have a cool, hip image. You know, it depends too. You know, if you have a legitimately cool, hip CEO, female or female, or female or male, male or female, you, if you're in the social media world, the communications world of your company, you want to get them out there. And social media now is an instant access. It really is an amazing tool that we have here. I mean, without thinking, you can go out and speak to the world. Now, whether the world listens to you or even notices you, that's the crapshoot. But in theory, you put something out and you have the ability, the potential to talk to the world. Now, once again, if the world notices you, that's the winning the lottery of going viral, or the result of your efforts to get yourself out there and be known and be seen. The funny thing is that everybody wants to go viral. I mean, that's the goal of anyone that does anything on social media video wise. You want to go viral. I mean, that's the thing. Look at that Hook Tua girl. I mean, her star is rightly diminished, but she's still out there doing something. Instead of being a drunk young woman walking down the street, she's got something of a career going. I don't know what it is at this point. But my point is, she had her moment in the sun for doing nothing, being pretty obscene. But in today's world, anything goes. But as I said, within the corporate world now, there's definitely a drive here. When you've seen what the social media and legacy media means to a brand, whether it's positive or negative. You know, there's the old adage that all publicity is good, is great, good or bad. People are talking about you. The goal is to overcome the bad or, you know, reinforce the good. But you know, Jeff Bezos' wedding last year became an international event. And so when you keep seeing stuff about Jeff Bezos' multi-million dollar wedding, then you also think of Amazon, right? So is it bad? I mean, yeah, you know, there was a lot of blowback on that wedding, all the excess and the money spent. But at the same time, it kept the name Jeff Bezos, who is completely tied to the identification of Amazon, subliminally or out in front. Amazon was getting free publicity by its CEO getting married. And why was that news? Because he's become something of a celebrity in his own right. And so, as I said, as the social media world now has completely dominated things, and now social media is even more of a marketing tool than television, and certainly more than radio or newspapers. But it's right now battling with television, and it's probably beating television revenue. There's no question. So the goal is to become a viral sensation, or at the very least, create an online or social media presence of some way. So suddenly these well-educated, kind of bookwormish, nerdy people, men or women, and yeah, you know what? Women can be nerds too, okay? Let's not just throw the nerd tag on guys. Women can be nerds too, equal opportunity. But the goal here now is to take these people who might not necessarily be very cool or hip, but they are in that job. And that job of CEO, especially of a major company, gives you a certain, even if you're a nerd, some of your nerd factor either becomes semi-cool or at very least acceptable. Because, hey, you've got this high-profile job. You're the CEO of a major car company or food company or whatever it is, online company, whatever it is. And so the goal now, it seems, is that these companies are trying to personalize and humanize themselves. And the only way to do that is not hire a spokesperson or create a spokesperson like Ronald McDonald or the King, but follow the Colonel Sanders, Dave Thomas, Donald Trump example, Jeff Bezos example of being out there as a personality unto yourself who also represents the company and bringing a humanistic side to create that connection, not just with the brand name, but actually to put something of a face and a human aspect to that relationship with the brand. Not just a brand loyalty, but actually a personal connection, perhaps, with who's running that company. So you're obviously seeing more and more CEOs of major companies coming out of the ivory tower, trying to, even though they may belong to country clubs and they may live in $15 million mansions and they may be completely out of touch with the average person, when they do a TikTok video, they certainly try to look relatable. They're not wearing $1,000 suits or $1,000 dresses. They're wearing denim shirts and jeans and Dockers and golf shirts or whatever it is to look like one of us. And sometimes they can pull it off and sometimes they can't. So the latest sensation happened a couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure within the hallways of this major fast food company, this was like, oh, we're going to get the CEO. We've got this new burger coming out, and so, hey, CEO, we'd like you to, instead of us doing, you know, we're going to have our commercials for this thing, but, you know, this is a new product. I guess it was out you know, internationally had been in different countries, but it was the first time that it was introduced on a major rollout in the United States. So it's like, hey, we've got this new product, and we'd love to have you, Mr. CEO, do something fun. You know, the key is fun. Everybody has to have fun. Everything has to be fun. Isn't this fun? Oh, they're so, that person is fun. This is fun. Oh, this, everything's fun. So won't it be fun to have our CEO sitting in a, not in his, you know, 500 square foot office, but, you know, sitting in the company cafeteria, just like every average Joe, and, you know, sitting and not dressed in a finely tailored suit with a crisp collar and a tautly tied necktie, but no, just, you know, kind of hanging out with the bros and the gals and having a little lunch, having a little, you know, fast food lunch. So in theory, of course, that is the perception that they wanted, I assume, wanted to create. Now, obviously, as I said, you know, there's a lot of skepticism right away on this. One thing that social media has done is made everybody a critic. And even the smallest things are now up for criticism. There are a lot of haters out there. And there are a lot of people that just love to nitpick and find things wrong with everything. And that's kind of that's why they surf the net. Today, it's kind of a double-edged sword, because it can, you know, going out on social media can certainly have some very positive ramifications and results, but it can also have some negative ones. Now, nobody wants to think about the negative ones when they're going to go out and do it. They think that what I'm doing is cool. I'm cool. And so everything is going to just blossom from this. And then when you're out there in the public arena, you better be ready to take the slings and arrows, especially in today's world, because the anonymity of social media allows anyone to criticize without really having to face anybody. And that makes criticism a heck of a lot easier. But, you know, when you put your face, you know, on a TikTok or Instagram video, or you put your name on a post, or if you write something that goes out in a newspaper, a magazine or something, and you put your name on it, you know, you're opening yourself up to public reaction. And some of it may be positive, and you certainly think what you had to share is a positive thing. But there are some people that will disagree, and you better be ready for the blowback, and you better have a tough skin, and you better be ready for people to read into things or pick up on something that you had no idea was going to be a positive or a negative. Some of this, that's what makes, you know, going viral something of a crapshoot. I said, there was a time when you didn't want to be viral. We didn't want to catch a virus. You still don't want a virus on your computer. You certainly don't want a virus in your body, but for some reason, you want your video to be viral. I love the way the word viral has taken on a positive connotation while it still retains its negative connotation in many cases. So here is this, I'm sure, as it's conceptualized and put forth in front of the CEO of this major fast food company. Hey, we've got this new burger out here. We're very excited. We've got this I could hear it. I used to do this, folks. I was in public relations. I know the jargon, and I know the way this is pitched. Hey, we've got this multi-platform, multi-layered, you know, campaign to get the word out about this new burger. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to do this. And man, if we could just get you, Mr. CEO, Mrs. CEO, Miss CEO, to do this, it would really help in the overall
mix of our marketing tools and platforms. It would just be the icing on the cake. We're doing the traditional things that we always do. Guerrilla marketing, visuals, billboards, posters, you know, in the stores, you know, advertising on television. But, you know, this social media thing, we've let influencers taste it. But, you know, we really are hoping to bring you into the mix here and create kind of an image for the company that make a connection with the CEO, like all these other companies have been doing of late on social media. Now, once again, that could be looked at as a negative or a positive. Look at Elon Musk. I mean, 2 years ago, Elon Musk was the golden, I mean, he wasn't beloved by everybody, but he certainly had a high level of respect for some of the things that he had. I mean, the guy's a trillionaire, and some of these projects like obviously the Tesla and SpaceX and Starlink and some of these amazing, very, beneficial, certainly profit-making, but also very beneficial technologies. You know, Tesla's playing into the need over the last 5 or 10 years of more energy, efficient and electric cars, right? I mean, so Tesla, boom, it exploded. Especially over the last 4 years, the administration at the time, the Biden administration, was very bullish on electric cars. They were going to ban electric car, you know, gas cars by a certain time in the next 2 or 3 years. I mean, you know, that's been rescinded. But my point is, so Elon Musk comes and fills that void with this high level luxury, you know, Tesla car, electric, all electric, you know, beating the competition, beating all the major companies. They had hybrid cars, but he comes in with this cool looking, cool working electric car and takes the world by storm. And his stock goes crazy and makes $1 million. Then he decides, I want to go to space. I mean, the man's an engineer. I want to go to space. He starts launching rockets and actually helping NASA. And then he creates this thing called Starlink, which brings internet and links up. You know, there's a ton of Elon Musk-owned satellites that are basically linking up the globe with internet. And you could say, oh, well, he's just, you know, cluttering space. But at the same time, he has provided some areas of the world, especially some deprived areas, that had no connection to the outside world because they couldn't get internet access, and his Starlink technology brought some of these remote areas into the 21st century for the first time. So, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, Elon Musk was hailed as one of these groundbreaking kind of people. And then in the last 2 years, when he got involved with the Trump administration with the whole Doge thing, he became enemy number one. And I'm sure he was not expecting that kind of blowback to the point where it was actually hurting his company. And so he stepped away. There's something good, as I said before, there's something good about being high profile. And I'm sure that he kind of rode that wave and figured, well, I can use my popularity that I have in these other worlds. And everybody loves me, at least the people that surround him tells him he is. And so, hey, I'm going to go and help the government get rid of all this waste. Well, that didn't go over very well with a lot of people. Who's this outsider? And he's cutting these programs and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And suddenly, not only was Elon Musk not used to personal attacks, because he has been lauded ever since he came on the scene with the Tesla and SpaceX like that. As I said, he rubs people the wrong way, but you couldn't deny his success and you couldn't deny, his accomplishments, whether you like the guy or not. You got to be fair. And but here was a chance. Once you enter that political world, it's a whole different kind of ball game. And now, whatever the same people that lauded him for all these innovations that were actually very progressive, you know, electric cars, space travel, adventure, exploration, Starlink, connectivity to remote areas to help the deprived people get connections and stuff to the outside world, whether it was for medical uses or information. My gosh, you know, these were all progressive things. Those same people, once he aligned himself with Trump, turned on him in a second. So not only did he have to get used to getting the slings and arrows of his personal popularity, but if you notice, he distanced himself from Trump when it was becoming very clear that his businesses were beginning to be affected adversely with this new collaboration that people were not happy about. And my God, they were blowing up Tesla, you know, cars and lots and things like that, you know, and it was starting to affect his stock price. And it wasn't soon after that, when the stock price started to go down, it wasn't soon after that that all of a sudden Elon Musk was no longer standing next to President Trump in the Oval Office. He realized that, yeah, you know what? I better get back to what I do. I want to be personally liked again. I don't like being disliked like this and people saying bad things about me, because I like having my ego boosted, but also I've got this empire here worth trillions of dollars, and I don't want that to go down the drain either. And so he doesn't do anything subtly. Boom, he cut ties with Donald Trump. And now the funny thing is, now nobody's blowing up Teslas anymore. You notice there's no more firebombs with Teslas? So our hatred for Tesla seemed to end as soon as you know, Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, seemed to take a lower profile with Donald Trump, actually cutting ties with him. Now, I don't see people. I see a lot of Teslas driving on the street, still do. I don't see the bumper sticker anymore that says, I bought this before, you know, there was a bumper sticker about, you know, I bought this Tesla before, you know, Elon and Donald Trump got together. There was something like that. My point is, Elon Musk had a very high profile as being the CEO that was immediately associated with his various projects and his success. And then all of a sudden, when he put himself out into the world, in a bigger, high profile social media way, he took some hits, and you don't hear about Elon Musk anymore. He seems to just be going about doing his business now. And I'm wondering in the long run if that might not be the best way to do things, as this example that I'm telling you about seems to prove. So this major fast food company gets their CEO. They dress him down, no $1,000 suits, no fancy office. They put him in a, it seems to be a very nondescript, whether it was a little office or by a cube, or maybe it was a, you know, cafeteria or some little space. And he's going to proudly say to the world that I am going to have this new burger, our new burger we're so excited about, and I'm going to have this for lunch. And oh, I know that internally, the people that handle him and the communications people and the market people are like, oh my God, this is going to be so great. We're going to have this video online with our CEO, excuse me, that's going to show how a real person he is. And there's all this, you know, attacks about fast food. And here it goes to show that this guy just doesn't sell burgers, but he eats the burgers. You know, hey, what a cool guy. Now, I don't know how cool this guy is in real life. I think they have to do a little work on that. But as I said, you still get some hip factor because you're the head of one of the biggest companies in the world. But there's some things that you just can't overcome. And this guy isn't, you know, he's kind of a nerdy looking guy. If you go online, and you'll be able to find this. Just say, you know, CEO eating a hamburger, and you'll find what I'm talking about if you don't know what I'm talking about. But my point is that so in this case, you've already got a little mountain to climb. You've already got something to overcome. And what you're also doing is you're putting this guy out now into the public, taking a higher profile, stance, and you're opening him up to public reaction or public criticism. Now, I'm sure that nobody who devised this concept of the CEO looking like Joe Normal, sitting down eating a new hamburger, ever thought that this would have a negative aspect. And on paper, it really shouldn't. How could it? Right? I mean, you could dismiss it. You could not pay attention to it. And some people might look at it and say, oh, that's fine, and let it pass by. But I don't inherently think that there was any downside to this. And that's where the great mystery of viral comes in. I don't think the people at this fast food company that devised this concept, whether it was the marketing people or the public relations people or whoever, I don't think it was a bad thing to do necessarily. But there always has to be the caveat of somebody might find something to be negative about, because that's the world we live in. People, as I've said many times on this podcast, we don't do anything in moderation. People will either love something great or love something and just go crazy over it, or they will hate it to the point of being rude and nasty and mean and angry. There's very little stuff we don't hear about. It goes away into the ether. The stuff we hear about most is stuff that we find engaging and exciting, and we want to tell everybody, and we go hog wild about that on the positive side. Or there's something that we find negative and we go hog wild on the negative side. The stuff doesn't really register. So when you're going out on the social media world, whether you're a CEO or you're somebody sitting in your basement, you better understand that you're opening yourself up, and a lot of times it's an X factor. And I'm sure there was an X factor here that nobody saw coming. So they did everything right. They tried to make this CEO look, very comfortable, very normal and average. No ivory tower guy here. Dressed him down, put him in a nondescript room, and put the new burger in front of him. And, he's not the hippest guy on earth, and he was a little, his delivery is very kind of nerdish. But in the business world, I'm sure he's looked at as a very impressive, competent guy. They're not looking for cool, hip people in the boardroom. They're looking for smart, efficient business people. And a lot of times the twain doesn't meet. And that's where you get in trouble with social media. Because if you're trying to take somebody that doesn't have the hip factor, you could be in trouble. I mean, look at someone like Mark Cuban. Mark Cuban is a nerdy guy. There's no question. I mean, he invented something, the technology that ultimately led to video streaming on the internet, right? That's why the guy's a billionaire. But he also has, he's got a cool factor to him. He looks kind of like a frat boy. He's a good-looking guy, kind of a frat boy, kind of a cool image. And so he's probably a very good example of somebody who could pull that off of being the CEO and the founder and kind of in a nerdy world. But he also, and there's a nerd factor to Mark Cuban too, but he's overcome it. He bought sports franchises and he's on television, on Shark Tank. And so he's been able to kind of bridge that gap. He's kind of he brings a hip factor as opposed to trying to overcome the nerd factor. Mark Cuban is a nerdy guy. He had to have been to create that and be an engineer like that. But he gives off the image of a frat boy, a very relatable image. And so that's why he continues to be very popular. A lot of CEOs don't have that ability. They're either, bookwormy, you know, Harvard MBAs that, you know, that have gone up the ladder. You know, they maybe have come from privilege or whatever it is. They're not hip. They try to be hip. And that's, there's nothing worse than someone who's not hip trying to be hip, you know, and that's what, I think that's what happened here. You know, I'm sure that this company said, hey, we want our guy to be relatable and cool. And they were trying to make him relatable and cool and give him some kind of a hip factor, but sometimes you just can't do it. Sometimes it's you're better off to be unseen and rely on Ronald McDonald or the Burger King or some other logo or some other character. I mean, here, do we know who's the head of Pillsbury? No, but we know the Pillsbury Doughboy and we stick our finger in his belly and he goes, I don't know who heads up Pillsbury. I'm better off probably not knowing. But I love that little doughboy, I'll tell you that much. And sometimes, you know, I can in today's social media world, I understand the temptation to say, hey, we need to get our CEO out here, you know, and personalize him. Yeah, but you know, somebody needs to raise their hand and say, I get what you're saying, I understand it. It's a viable idea, but I don't know if this is the guy to do it. Now, if you say that, you've got a pretty big set because you could be fired the next day. You're questioning our CEO's you know, coolness or hipness or whatever you want to say it. I mean, that's, you're not the team player. How dare you? But if somebody would have raised their hand, maybe they wouldn't have had the kind of commotion that they're going through now. It seems, if I could justify the people on the inside saying, oh, this is so nitpicky, this is so petty, but it doesn't matter. It took on a life of its own. And so here's what happens. I said, you can go online and go on Google or wherever you go and just say, you know, CEO eating a hamburger, new hamburger, and you'll see the video. Don't forget, this is a major, major fast food company that is, you know, that people like to take pot shots at. You know, everybody's complaining about the high prices of fast food and all this stuff. So, you know, if you're the biggest one of the biggest companies in the world, you already have enemies before you've even done anything. So once again, going into the social media world, you better know that. And in theory, this is the guy. Now you're putting a face. If you hate the company, now you could put a face on that hate. Before, you couldn't put a real face on that hate. You just hated the company. So you take that risk. It's a fine line. And it isn't always easily balanced. And in this case, it didn't work. Or, as I'll get to, or did it? Interesting. Stay tuned. So they call that a tease in the business. So they create this 30-second video, and there's the CEO looking all normal, sitting in his little room. And I'm going to have one of these new hamburgers. And oh, wow, what a beautiful. First of all, he calls it a product, which is not good. It's food. Food is exciting. Food is fun. We like to eat food. Everybody's a foodie. Everybody talks about notes and hints and layers and complexities today. Everybody's a food critic, right? I don't know when that happened. Before, you just go, yeah, I had some dinners. It was really good. And bam, they really give you a lot. We took home a lot. You get a lot for your money. Now everybody talks about how the tastes blend and there's hints of this and notes of this and everybody's a food critic, whatever. So he sits down and says, I'm going to have one of these new things. So first of all, he calls it a product. Not very good. If you're trying to, the average person doesn't talk about food especially as a product. Now, he called it a burger in there as well, but he used in one of his descriptions was a product. He could have said, one of our best offerings, but he used product. Right off the bat, he sounds like a CEO. It doesn't matter if you put him in a Gap shirt or some Dockers, or you put him in a cafeteria. If you use CEO jargon in the midst of trying to be cool and relatable and an average Joe, you're already showing yourself as not too genuine. And maybe you're playing a part as opposed to being the real you. So right off the bat, somebody should have said, cut. Could you not call it a product? Because to me, that sounds like he's in a meeting with a PowerPoint presentation, talking to his board of directors. You know, we've got these new products that were going to come out. This is one of our best products. No. When you're trying to relate to me about, especially a food item, you want to talk about, boy, doesn't this look delicious? You want to make my mouth water. You don't want to talk to me in business jargon. And so right off the bat, before he even really got started, before he even tasted the thing, which also got him in trouble, but right away he was already cutting himself at the knees by pretending to be normal and everyday and relatable. And then he calls this supposedly delicious looking burger a product, which immediately sends him back into the C-suite, back into the CEO office. I don't care where you're sitting him. If you're putting him in a cafeteria, if you're dressing him down, by him calling that burger a product, he just told me again that he is a CEO. So that already there should have been cut, stop. We need to do that again. This wasn't live. So I do blame some of the people that were behind there because somebody should have raised their hand and said, stop, could you not call it a product? I know that takes some guts to stop and say that to your CEO, but you know what? That's your job. Supposedly, that's why you're hired, because you're a communications expert or a marketing expert. And so you want to help this person as much as you can. That's why they hired you. That's why you work for them. So why wouldn't you stand up and say, can we stop and do it again? Can you not call it a product? Maybe he gets offended. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he goes, thank you for that. I never thought of that. Did you ever think of that? That maybe he might actually be happy for your advice? Nobody said anything. This wasn't live. If it's live, what are you going to do about it? No, this was recorded. This could have been redone. This could have been edited, but it wasn't. So he's calling the new delicious burger a product. So right away, whatever you were trying to do here, you've pretty much already lost. In my view, you've lost 70% of your credibility, because now he's a CEO again. You tried whatever you can do to make him sound look relatable and present this relatable image, and then he uses CEO jargon and wipes away all what you tried to do. And then the poison pill comes. Okay, you can maybe somebody, people, you know, look, I listen to this stuff closely. I used to do this. I listen very close. I watch very close. I'm observant in that way. Maybe the average person doesn't notice that he called it a product. It's no big deal. Okay, let's say you get a pass on that. I don't think you get a pass on that, but let's say that's no big deal. Whatever. Okay, fine. But here's where the major criticism and where all the haters and all the nitpickers seized upon. You know, there's already people that have a very negative connotation and feeling about any kind of fast food, whether it's the price of it or the nutritional value or everything else. There's many reasons why a very big segment of people don't want, are against fast food. So they're already your enemy, their adversary. Now, as I said, you're putting yourself out there to the wolves. So you better make sure you've got all your I's dotted and your T's crossed, because there's people out there that are going to want to hate this and hate you and find a problem with it before they even see it. And you got to know that. That's why someone should have raised their hand and said, don't call that a product. Call it an offering. Call it one of our best menu items, whatever, but don't call it a product. That's all you had to do. Menu item, offerings, one of our delicious offerings. Doesn't that sound better than one of our, doesn't this look like a great product? That's all I'm talking about. That's the difference in perceptions. But semantics aside, let's pretend that didn't ring anybody's bells. That wasn't a big red flag for a lot of people. But this was. The whole idea is that the CEO is going to show you that he just doesn't sell these burgers, just doesn't sell these products. He eats them. One of the biggest, most successful ad campaigns, people don't even remember this anymore, but in the 70s and 80s, there was the Hair Club for Men. It's still around, but there was a guy named Cy Sperling who was the head of this company that sold men's hair pieces, the Hair Club for Men. And the reason why it was so successful was that Cy Sperling went on and said, not only am I the CEO, but I'm a client. And he showed himself bald, and he showed himself with one of his hair pieces on. Now, that took guts, right? The whole idea of hair pieces is to conceal your baldness. But he put himself on the line, and he created a bond with that audience and with that brand immediately by saying, not only am I the CEO, I'm a customer. I'm a client. Look at me. I use it. I wear it. This is my product on my head. And so in many ways, this burger tasting by the CEO was kind of a throwback to Cy Sperling. Not only do I sell these burgers, but I eat them. I like them. Well, the problem was, you know, let's face it, when we get, especially a hamburger, right? I mean, we all know how to eat a hamburger. You know, when that hamburger comes, whether it's from a fast food place or a gourmet burger, you know, there's just, I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, if you're a vegetarian, I apologize. But when you get a hamburger on a plate in a restaurant, wherever, and it's hot, and you could smell those juices, man, there's nothing better than than digging into that hamburger. And you want to take a nice big bite, and you want to get all those hints and flavors and layers of taste. Okay, you budding food critics out there. I mean, when you grab that hamburger, I mean, let's think about it. The hamburger is made to be grabbed. It's made to be grabbed. It's made to be taken. You got to have two hands to eat a hamburger. You know, it's not a dainty food stuff. You need to grab it. You need to lift it. And there it is. And when you, and that thing smells so good, and most likely you're hungry, and man, with that first bite of a hamburger is the best bite of the whole thing, right? The first bite of a hamburger is the best bite of the hamburger. It is feeding your hunger. It is tantalizing your taste buds. As you go on, it continues to be good, but you're going from 0 to 100 in terms of taste explosion. So that first bite of a hamburger, oh my gosh! I mean, it should be able to see the bite. You take, when you bite that thing, it should be the messiest thing. If that's a real burger worth its weight, it should be a messy affair. If you take a bite of a hamburger and nothing spills out, if a tomato doesn't slide out, or the ketchup or the sauce or the lettuce doesn't fall out or something, you haven't taken a real bite of the burger. That's the hamburger experience. That's why in today's world, these burgers are 5 feet high and there's 17 different ingredients on them. Eggs, you know, fried eggs and onion rings and lettuce and French fries and you name it. I'm not a huge fan, but I watch it. But you ever watch Guy Fieri on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives take a bite of a burger? That's why the guy's popular. Right there. When he takes a bite of a sandwich or a burger, he takes a real human, realistic bite. And that's why the guy has an empire. Because he's not fake. Maybe he is, but on for all I know, he goes home and he eats escargot. I don't know. But all I know is the image, personally, when he takes a bite of a sandwich, he grabs it, he opens his mouth, he takes a big bite, half of it's hanging out. That doesn't matter. That's real. That's how real people eat. And that's what the hamburger experience is all about. So if you're going to have your CEO tell you how great this new burger is, or tell the people how great this new burger is and how much he enjoys it, he better take a real bite of that hamburger. It better be messy. It better be chewy and almost aggressive. All the ingredients better be falling out. I don't care if you've got, if you know what, the first bite of a hamburger, the first move you make after you take you got your hands around a hamburger, and you take that big bite, the next move better be for your napkin. If you don't reach for your napkin after the first bite of a really good sandwich or a real good hamburger, then you didn't take a real bite. Because it better be messy. You better need to wipe your hands or wipe your mouth or wipe your chin. Because if you took a real bite, there has to be some evidence of it left on your hands or your face. The problem was with this CEO going out of his way to seem relatable, to seem normal, to seem like, I really like this hamburger. He almost gently picks it up, brings it to his mouth, and takes, I don't even know if you could call it a bite. It was almost like a nibble. Now, the whole idea of this video was to say that I'm Mr. CEO, and not only do I sell these delicious burgers, I eat them. I'm the Cy Sperling of hamburgers. I'm not only the CEO, I'm a customer. But instead of taking that hamburger and taking a big bite, and yeah, if you want to be relatable, there's nothing better than having a CEO with ketchup or sauce on his mouth or dripping on his hands that he has to go and get his napkin. You hope for that. That sells your entire concept of this guy really likes this. But instead, I don't even say he took a bite. He took a nibble, and maybe not even a nibble. So you already have a guy that looks a little nerdy, but you try to make him look relatable, and then he goes and takes this dainty nibble, if that, after telling you how much he can't wait to eat this product. So you got him calling it a product, and then while he's telling you how delicious it looks, he takes what seems to be barely a bite. Well, that's all that the haters needed to see. As I said, going into this, this company already has its detractors. They're the biggest one of the biggest companies in the world, and they're selling fast food. They've got two big strikes on them. And now they've got a CEO that's telling me how much he loves his new burger, and yet, and the whole idea is to show him eating it and being just like one of you. And then he takes this suspect nibble. Well, that's all that needed to be seen. Instead of this being something of an innocuous thing, of just kind of like a little part of the marketing mix, oh, we're going to also have the CEO doing a little tasting of this. Oh, okay, that'll be fine. Oh, well, fine, I'll take a bite of it, blah, blah, blah. Well, that lack of a bite led to a viral sensation, well, or an event, but not in a positive way. Almost immediately, CEO blasted for, you know, fake bite, whatever. The haters immediately jumped on this. They attacked him. They attacked his bite. They attacked his food. They attacked his look. They attacked everything. And what was seemed to have be a win-win kind of marketing little video here turned out to be a major fiasco. Everything that could have went wrong went wrong. Even if they didn't in their wildest dreams expect it to go wrong, and it, on paper it probably shouldn't have, but the finished product opened the door for criticism. And boy, did it come. And not only was the company and the CEO now getting hammered on social media, the exact opposite of what they were looking for, but then, not surprisingly, the competition said, wait a minute, the emperor has no clothes here. We're going to get in on this. Hey, CEO of the number two fast food company, and hey, CEO of the number four. And they went, well, here's my burger, and look at it. And then these guys were taking major, serious Guy Fieri bites to show the difference. Hey, I really like my company's sandwich. And so then, of course, the copying went on. What was an original idea by one of the companies initially went bad, and his competitors saw now a dent in the armor, and they seized on it. So now we had all the other fast food company CEOs suddenly jumping into the fray and taking their own bite. It was almost like the ice bucket challenge of hamburgers. Remember the ice bucket thing back in 2014, the charity little stunt for ALS, where you were supposed to dump water on your head and give to ALS. Remember how everybody made a video of that? That was the whole thing. Wound up making $115 million, one of the most successful charity drives there ever was, certainly in the early days of social media, and still to today, a pretty impressive number. The irony of the ice bucket thing, though, if you remember, what was so funny about the ice bucket thing, and once again, it became viral. That was exactly, nobody who knew, it was kind of a fluke, and then it became a national phenomenon. Everybody was doing it. Celebrities, politicians, everybody. The irony is, though, the way the ice bucket challenge started, actually, it got a little corrupted. It didn't stay the way it was supposed to be, but it raised the money, and that's what it was supposed to do, but it really... It became so big that its original intent was corrupted, but it didn't matter because the whole idea was to bring awareness to ALS and to raise money, and that certainly worked. So it was amazingly successful, charity raising stunt or event, whatever you want to call it. But the idea of it was called the challenge. the idea was, if you remember, the organic thing was that it was either you take a you either accept the challenge. You have 24 hours. If you don't accept the challenge of dumping a bucket of ice water on your head, if you don't accept that challenge in 24 hours, then you have to donate. See, that was the challenge. The challenge wasn't just to dump the water on your head. That's what it, that's the public sort of, because everybody wanted to, you know, it's like the polar plunge thing. Everybody now wanted to be cool and do the ice bucket challenge. And they still donated. So they did both. And it's fine. As I said, it was it, they did both and they got their own little fun video and they donated money. So it, you know, mission accomplished. But the original intent of it was either or. I challenged Tom Smith, my friend, to take the ice bucket challenge. Nobody, you in theory, nobody wants to dump a bucket of ice on their head. Okay, you have 24 hours to come up with, you know, get the nerve to do that. If you don't accept the challenge to dump this bucket of ice on your head, then you have to donate to ALS. That was the original concept. But it took on a life of its own, and everybody wanted to join in and do the ice bucket thing, and they still gave money. But the funny thing is that while that was a viral sensation, the original concept kind of got diluted. It still did its purpose, brought the awareness, brought in a ton of money, but the actual challenge, it wasn't really a challenge anymore. The challenge part came, got taken out. Everybody just wanted to do the, everybody wanted to do it. And that's what happened here with the CEO burger thing. Now, when CEO won, shows that he doesn't really, almost looks like he doesn't like his hamburger. When he shows he takes a nibble and he's trying to tell me how much I like it and he doesn't take the kind of bite that you should take out of a hamburger if you like it. Well, now all of his competitors go, all right, I'm going to do that and I'm going to show you how to take a bite. But here's the other side of the coin. So you can look at it and say, wow, really, what a disaster this is. Well, I don't know. On paper, it's a disaster, right? You set out to do one thing in a positive way, and it was completely negative. I don't know if heads rolled. I don't know how the CEO took all this, but there was a lot of criticism and a lot of stuff that was very personal. Went long past his nibble on the hamburger. As I said, then the haters came out in full force. They made fun of his outfit. They made fun of his looks. They made caricatures of him. You know, cartoons. It became a whole thing for a couple of weeks. In addition to his competitors now, also making fun of him by taking what they said is a real bite. I really like this hamburger. They didn't call him out by name, but the fact that they went out and took a hamburger bite, much more bigger, much more aggressive, much more sloppy than the original. Now they're showing that they really like it. So all intentions or all, you know, kind of postmortems on this say is, wow, this was an idea that went terribly wrong. And the CEO looks bad and the company looks bad and you're giving your competitors a little edge here. And oh my God, what kind of a fiasco we're in. And he had to come in and make some, you know, comments, blah, 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 blah. But you can look at it from the other side. Look at the other side of, was this intentional? What's the idea of a TikTok video? To get attention. To create awareness. Perhaps in today's world, that old adage that all publicity is good publicity, bad publicity is good. Yeah, it got a hugely negative response and allowed the haters to go crazy. But that hate, that criticism, elevated the awareness of that TikTok video for people to watch it, to see for themselves, to see if the criticism was legit, to make up their own mind. They may not have ever wanted to. Who cared if the CEO of this company decided to take a bite of their new burger? It should have been, as I said before, the eh. But it went from eh to either lots of hatred or lots of love. It wasn't eh. The lots of hatred or the lots of love, that's a success. The eh, that's a failure. So in theory, while perhaps the original intent was a failure, the end result achieved the end game. Raise awareness of this new burger. Didn't really help the CEO's image, but you know what? Maybe we don't know this CEO like we think. Maybe he took one for the team. Maybe this was devised. Maybe he did this on purpose. Conspiracy theorists can go crazy on that. Because at the end of the day, everybody was viewing that video. Everybody was talking about this video. And that new product had to be mentioned in any story that was about it. In helping to promote the new blank, CEO of blank, well, that video could have gone into the ether. Nobody could have ever heard about it. So whether it was by mistake or perhaps by design, it did achieve its goal. Even though it may have failed if it was legitimately meant to say, hey, we want to do this in a positive way. It failed in that respect, but its failure resulted in exactly what the result wanted to be. Awareness for the new product. Views. Attention. That's not a failure. It failed conceptually, but it didn't fail results-wise. So whether it was intentionally designed to do just what it did, to get haters to notice it, if it was, it's genius, and I would never, and they should never admit that. That should be a secret that gets put into the same vault with the Colonel Sanders recipe. But man, if that was devised to be that way, and the CEO was a part of it, and he didn't mind taking a hit for the team, it was a stroke of marketing genius. If it was a complete viral failure and crapshoot that wound up taking a hit in some ways, but ultimately getting the desired effect or result, then it was worth it, I guess. We know about that burger. We know about that CEO. How much of a failure was it? Maybe the original concept failed, but the result didn't. So that's the thing about what's going on today on social media. We don't really know anymore what is legit and what isn't. The fact that we can make an argument for both sides of the coin is the lesson to be learned here is be careful. Because what you see on social media may be legit, and it may not be. Take everything you see on social media with a grain of salt and check it on it yourself. There's so many times I go on and I say, wait a minute, this story can't be right. And I'll go on a search engine and say, and then you'll say, no, this is fake. We have to be more diligent now. We don't have that filter anymore. There used to be things called editors that helped. Before things got out to the public, there was a screening process. The screening process is gone. It's us now. You're your own editor. So this was either a marketing disaster or a marketing stroke of genius? We'll never know. But the lesson to be learned is when you're out there out watching stuff, be aware that what you see may not be what you see. And the second lesson to take from this entire thing is when you bite a hamburger, grab it with two hands, take a bite, and make it as messy as possible. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And of course, you can get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 512. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears, grab that burger.